WEIOI
101.5 FM.
The Hawk is on the air.
Hey, everybody. What's up? Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. I'm Sarah Jessica, and this is Hot Shots on Air. And I hope you've had a great Tuesday so far. Tonight, I'm speaking with Peter Snow. He is the vocalist of Hamiltonian socialist rock band The Soviet Influence by night and a social worker by day. You can find Peter on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, and all streaming services as The Soviet Influence. So, hey, Peter.
Hey.
How's it going?
I'm good.
That's great. Good to hear.
Yeah.
I guess like just to kind of give a little introduction, just in case there's some people here who aren't familiar with you.
Yeah.
How would you describe your sound and style as a musician?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think like stylistically, sort of, and like, I mean, I came up in the alternative rock world, so certainly have a lot of that in my blood, and sort of like post-punk 80s music also in my blood. But I think the music that I make now with the band The Soviet Influence is very much kind of comes out of that kind of feeling. I mean, it's definitely got its rock elements. It's pretty increasingly faster and heavier, I think, than, you know, it started out a bit more atmospheric, and it's moved in a much more concise sort of, you know, direction, so it sounds like, you know, It drives more, it goes more, it's heavier guitars, all that kind of stuff. So that's, you know, that's sort of where we're at. I really like, I like guitar riffs, so we've got a lot of those.
For
that
sure.
Kind of stuff.
Yeah. Who would you say are your biggest musical influences?
That's a good question. I mean, historically, because if I'm like 100 years old, throughout my career, I mean, Radiohead was my first big favorite band, so there's always been a huge Radiohead flavor. But yeah, I mean, but I think there's also like a lot of other influences, and especially like with the group, because there's four of us and we all kind of have different musical interests and backgrounds. But at least for me personally, so yeah, I mentioned Radiohead, I think, you know, stuff like, Talking Heads and Joy Division and those sorts of 80s bands. But also, I mean, like it's unmistakable that there's that late 90s alternative rock flavor. So like, you know, like Treasure We Have were a big example of that. You know, Our Lady Peace, those kinds of bands were certainly like popular when I was young. And, you know, there's a lot of that kind of influence on there. And then usually it's whatever I've been listening to. So, you know, like if I start listening to somebody when I'm writing, then I'll sort of drift in that direction and start to kind of sound more and more like whoever I'm listening to. Just because that's what happens, right? It gets in your head and then you're, at least for me anyway, gets in my head, and then I'm sort of pushing myself, you know, to try and do something as good as what I'm hearing, I think, is what happens.
Totally, yeah. Do you remember what you listened to as a kid, or what you kind of grew up on around your house, and do you feel as though those early influences have an impact on your current style?
Yeah, so my biggest, like when I was like a kid, I loved Elvis Presley, which was wild, because, you know, obviously he was dead by then. But, like, he's just, like, I don't know, it's something about him. It's, like, just the magic of this, like, very charismatic guy who, like, just wrote these really, I mean, he didn't write all the songs, but they were good songs. And then, so I had my mom, who was, like, a big music person in the late 60s and the 70s, you know, sort of in the, you know, she saw, like, Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, you know, David Bowie, like, she saw all of them live in the 70s. So, like, that was her thing, and she had a record collection, which I would listen to. And in the car. So that was a big, like, hearing that stuff was pretty big and like really influenced. And then like progressive rock, so you know, we always used to listen to Genesis, and Yes, like those kinds of bands. So that kind of more, I guess, technically complicated music. Mm-hmm. And then like it's funny too though, because like with the Elvis thing, my mom was a big Rod Stewart fan as well. So like, and he was like by this point in time was like doing, you know, his whole like troubadour songwriter guy thing. You're not so much a rock star anymore. And it's just, yeah, it's just interesting that sort of dynamic between those different things I was listening to as a kid. And then like, so funny enough, so when I, right before I started high school, I got, dance music was like super popular, like that sort of like what we call it, dance music. I don't really know what the technical genre was, but it was super popular with everyone around me. So I like briefly had a flirtation with that. Mm-hmm. And then when I got to grade 9, I heard OK Computer by Radiohead and was like, nope, never mind. Mm-hmm. I don't like it. So I like alternative music. And then I was like off and running with, you know, sort of guitars and things like that. So that was, yeah, I'd say that's it. And it's still like, I mean, it's still in there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to escape your influences because you still listen to them. And we still go back and listen to stuff.
Oh, totally.
And, you know, and have it come up. You know, I mean, not so much, you know, as much Elvis anymore, but I don't really listen to his stuff as much as I do. But, you know, I still can appreciate, like, you know, rock and roll, that era, you know, 50s rock and roll, just for the, like, the rawness of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think about it, like, it was so out there for people. Like,
yeah.
You listen to, yeah, like, even listen to, like, Chuck Berry or Buddy Holly or any of those people, and it's like, you know, by our standards now, like, it's not super, you know, out there, it's not super dangerous or whatever.
It's super tame. Yeah.
Because, you know, we're the sort of evolution of that.
Yeah.
But for people back then, this stuff was, like, mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, the rawness and the sort of, you know, the heavy power of it was, like, just blowing people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, I mean, I can see that. If, like, your previous musical influences have been nothing like that, that you'd be like, oh, yeah, this is, like, totally out of left field. Anyway, so, yeah, I know, I like to think of that sometimes when I'm writing, like, how do we push ourselves to be like that, to, like, be that sort of raw and dangerous sounding. I don't think we really get there the way we probably would like to, but we try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. What was the first time that you listened to a piece of music and you thought, wow, I want to create that?
Mm-hmm. That's a really interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say, what would it have been? You know, it's funny because, like, I loved to sing growing up, so I still do, obviously. But, you know, so it was always about that part of it. But to actually, like, creating something and making something my own, because that's, like, my favorite thing that I was writing. I'd have to say it was probably, honestly, Trouble at the Hen House, the Tragically Hip album. I remember buying that because I had heard that the Tragically Hip were good. I had never heard any of their songs, but I had heard that they were good.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in, like, an HMV or something, and I was like, I heard this band is good, so I bought the album. I'm like, this was cool, check it out. And I remember, like, Gift Shop, I don't know how well you know that album, but, like, Gift Shop has this really kind of swirly guitar part to it, and I was like, there's, like, a whole world in this song. And it reminded me, like, of some of the stuff I listened to growing up, and I was like, there is a universe that inhabits this song, and I would love to be able to create worlds like that.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I had, like, zero capacity to do that. But I really thought, like, that would be amazing. And it was not long after that I started my first band. So
yeah.
I guess it sort of was like, oh, yeah, I guess that was, like, an impetus to, like, go and do that and make that happen.
Mm-hmm. So as well as singing, I believe you also play the guitar?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Do you play any other instruments?
I play the bass guitar, not too badly.
Mm-hmm.
Our bassist is much better than me, but I can play it.
Sure.
I can play drums a little. Like, I'm not a great drummer, but I can keep a beat.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say I play the, like, keyboards, but I do the keyboard parts for our songs. Like,
yeah.
I don't know that, like, I would not consider myself a player, but I can, you know, noodle around and you know, I know chords and stuff, and I can make things happen, but I would never be like, oh, I can play piano or keyboards or anything. I did take piano lessons as a kid, but I don't think it really stuck.
Sure.
But yeah, those are the main things that I have some level of competency at. Everything else, I'm cool with that and no good.
Mm-hmm. Are there any instruments that you would like to learn how to play?
That's a great question.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know, because, I mean, guitar was the one, and then I learned it, so I'm pretty happy about that. yeah, I never had a huge interest in wind instruments or anything like that, because they just didn't really... I'd love to be a better drummer, to be honest. Like, I'd love to be able to play drums better than I do. Mm-hmm. I put in next to no effort in order to achieve that goal, but I would enjoy doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be really cool, to be able to actually, like, really do that really well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be the main thing, I think, yeah, just to kind of figure that out and be able to really do it.
Cool. So with your singing and then also you playing the guitar, what came first?
Singing, for sure.
Singing.
When I was 7, my mom put me in a play, a musical.
Mm-hmm.
She thought I'd enjoy it, which
I did.
That's
where it starts.
Turns out she was right.
Mm-hmm.
But so I did that, and I started, like, doing choirs and stuff at school, and then was in the, like, Hamilton Catholic School Board Elementary choir thing for a bit, and then my voice changed, and then I had to relearn how to sing, which took a while, because I didn't have my angelic kid voice anymore. So yeah, singing was definitely first, and it was like, I loved it, I loved doing it. You know, when I couldn't do it for a while because I felt like I didn't have the confidence, it really hurt me, like, to not be able to do that, and then I was able to rebuild the confidence over many years and get to a place where I'm pretty comfortable now with it. And the other thing too with that, like, just to, you know, continue that story, is I was always surrounded by very, very talented singers because I was in, like, musicals and stuff, and, like, there's always, like, very talented people in those things. And so and this is something that I used to struggle with guitar too, which is I was always friends with really amazing guitar players. And, you know, when you're not as great as people around you, it can really push you to get better, but can also be, like, pretty, like, intimidating. So you kind of feel like, oh, I just don't, you know, I don't have it. You can see the special thing that someone else has, and you're like, oh, I don't have that. So it took a long time to, like, really get the confidence to be like, you know, it doesn't matter that I'm not that. I am what I am, and I can do some cool stuff with it. And it's actually really, finding that's really paid off, because I think that helps propel my songwriting and our band.
Oh, yeah. Frankly. Definitely. Yeah. When did you start creating music? And by any chance, do you remember the first song that you wrote?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was 16. And actually, a funny story. I've never told anyone before.
Mm-hmm.
So back in the...
Oh, an exclusive.
When I was a teenager,
mm-hmm.
Much music was still really popular and a thing that people watched. They played it was a Spice Girls concert one night. And I just came across it. And, admittedly, at that point, my interest in the Spice Girls was purely from a, you know, teenage boy, heterosexual teenage, well, actually bisexual, I guess, teenage boy perspective, but, you know, there's lots of Spice Girls, they're a bunch of attractive women. Anyway, and they had some decent songs, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember seeing the, like, spectacle of the show and just being, like, blown away by it. Like, I'd been to concerts, but I hadn't been to anything like that.
Yeah.
Because theirs was, like, huge production, you know, like... They were at the peak of their fame, so they were doing, like, crazy shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, it would be amazing to do stuff like that. You know, it really hit the theater kid in me. I was like, I wish I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that, so one of my friends was a guitar player, really, really good guitar player, and we had some classes together in grade 10, and I was like, hey, we should, like, get together and play music. And we knew that another guy in our class owned a drum kit. We didn't know if he could play it or not, but we knew he owned one. So we talked to him and we're like, yeah, let's go over. So then the three of us and then a couple other people came along for that first night. We just hung out and we played. I forget most of what we played that night, but I do know that we tried to write a song and we wrote this really, really generic song called Airman.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about Airman was, I don't even know what, like, I wrote the lyrics. I have no idea what it was about. It was some thing called Airman that would do stuff. But, like, there was no, I don't know, no rhyme or reason. It never was intended to be, really. But, that was it, though. We wrote that song. And we actually, like, we recorded that song at one point. And, like, we recorded that at practice, actually. We had, there's a tape, I think it was a videotape or something, of that, actually, which I have. Our drummer preserved it, so I have a copy of our first practice. And with my high school band, and, like, yeah, it was terrible, obviously, but it was very interesting that we did that on our very first go. It was like, let's just write something, and we did, you know, and then that evolved, and we did that song for a while, then eventually, you know, left it behind and wrote better stuff. But yeah, that was, that was a really interesting to do it that way, right? Like, it wasn't like me in my room by myself. I couldn't even play guitar at that point. All I could do was sing. I picked up a guitar like a week later. But, you know, to do it as a group was pretty cool. Because, I don't know, it, you know, getting those moments where you create something, even if it's not something that's good, like objectively not very well written, it's still like a subjectively good experience, because it's like, it's just great to make things with people, you know, and share that experience. And we were so like, just so excited by it. You know, we were a band for like 4 or 5 years. You know, we stayed together. So until university came and 2/3 of us moved away, so it wasn't possible to do it anymore. But yeah, so yeah, that was the, yeah, Airman was the first song. Cool. Airman.
Yeah. Yeah. When did you begin to look at music as something more than a hobby?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's been a few rounds of it in my life. So like the first was like right when I finished university for the first time, I was like, you know, I was in a band and we were okay. I don't think we were all that great, to be honest, but we were okay. We could play songs and we thought, well, let's give it a go and see what happens. And we played shows and, you know, we sold some albums and we got played a little bit, but not much, because we never were really anything of note. But, you know, at that point, when we started, we said, well, we'll see where this goes, because no one really had any commitments that they were tied down to at that point. Mm-hmm. So, like, we'll see what happens. And nothing really happened. And then it kind of, like, waned a bit. And then I think more recently, with the Soviet influence, it started out as just, like, because I never stopped writing. I never stopped recording at any point. So for, like, forever, I've just been writing and recording stuff. And then it was finally, like, you know what, this stuff is now, in my mind, of a quality and of a consistency that it's worth trying to push it more and try to do more with it and to form a band and build it, right, and grow. And I think that was the next step. Like, the thing that signaled, like, moving into that phase was, like, start actually getting other people and being like, it's going to be a band. It's not just going to be me. And it's going to be, like, you know, an equal partnership. Everyone's going to have a say and a stake, and we're all going to work together. And that was a way of saying, like, let's do this. And because the songs were there. And the fact that there were 3 other people in the world who agreed with them songs, is that the songs were there, was enough for me to be like, okay, you know, it's one thing for me to like my stuff. It's another thing for other people to say, like, no, this is actually pretty good and we should do something with this. So that was probably the moment when, you know, certainly when Blake and Peter joined, I was like, yeah, you know what, I think, and I credit Peter, so the other Peter in our band, there's 2 of us, because he had a lot of enthusiasm for the music, which is great, because that's been really nice. For my ego anyway, to have that. And yeah, I think that was the moment that said, like, hey, we could probably do something with this, because this stuff's good, and you know, we have a good idea for what we want our band to be, and I think it's something that's worth exploring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Did you study music or take professional lessons?
I studied music as a minor in university. That was the main thing. I took piano lessons as a kid. I did vocal lessons in high school, mostly like because of my musical theater stuff I was doing. Tried to improve in that direction. Never took guitar lessons other than like YouTube videos and stuff, which in hindsight probably should have. When I was younger, it would have probably sped up the process of learning a little bit. But, you know, I was never like a natural, still not like a natural gifted guitar player in any way. I mean, I can play, but I don't feel like I said my friend Matt, who I went to high school with, like, he was immensely gifted and talented and also hard, very, very hardworking. So he, like, is, you know, maxed out his ability, you know, I think. To, like, the most, I don't think I ever had the ability to max out in the first place, but, you know, I don't know if I've maxed out what I can do, but I can do what I need to do. So yeah, I did a minor, so I took a bunch of music classes, which was cool. Enjoyed that. And then I haven't really done much since then. I've like flirted with the idea of like doing more like either singing, mostly singing related stuff, but I've never really sat down to do it. So, you know, I watched, like, I'm like anyone now, right? You watch videos, you watch content online, and you're like, oh, there's neat little tricks or ideas, but yeah, nothing formal right now.
How did your family and like friends and peers react to you pursuing music?
Yeah, it just reminded me of high school. Yeah, like, so when we played in high school, we were a bit of a weird band, because we, you know, we weren't playing the stuff that was most popular among the group of people we were associated with.
Mm-hmm.
Our music was like, we played in a bit more of a classic rock end of vein, just because that's what we were listening to at the time. And, with also some modern stuff, but it just wasn't like the scene we were attached to was like much heavier, much, much, much heavier than what we were doing. So we were sort of on the periphery. So we weren't always well received. I mean, but even by people that like theoretically were friends of ours. I can remember playing in the cafeteria at school and having stuff thrown at us.
Mm.
But I think that was just by like, cause it was at lunchtime. I'm sure that was just by kids who were like, oh, look how cool I am.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I had anything to do with what we were doing.
Mm.
But I think overall, like, people have been very supportive. Friends have been super supportive. Family's been very supportive of what I'm trying to do. And same for the other guys in the group. You know, cause it does take a lot of help to make something work. So people have generally been pretty supportive, especially like with this latest project. I think people see the quality of it and that, like, yeah, this is actually really good stuff. So it's worth pursuing. My friend Matt, who I've mentioned like 3 times now, I still send him our new stuff. And, as well as another friend of mine, Dave, who was in a couple of bands with me before. And it's great to get, cause I mean, they're pretty honest and they consistently give really great feedback and generally positive feedback. So that's been really awesome. As far as that goes. So yeah, I think there's been a lot of support, which is fantastic. I will take it.
Awesome. Love to hear that. So you grew up in Hamilton.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And why decide to stay around?
Yeah, Hamilton's an interesting place.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's funny, right? Because there's like 2 groups of people in Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
There's the people who like have moved there from elsewhere and are like smitten with the place. And then there's this sort of like people that have been there not by choice, because that's where they lived and, you know, have varying opinions about it. You know, I've always had a kind of a mixed feeling about my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, it's cool. It has its good parts and its good aspects. And then there's other aspects of it that are infuriating and terrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and lead to just absolute, you know, anger about things that are happening in that city.
Yeah.
So it kind of goes both ways, you know, but it's the thing about the city, and I say this when I talk to you, but like where I grew up on a mountain, like you were like a 15-minute bus ride from downtown.
Mm-hmm.
15-minute bus ride from the mall, which was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like a 20-minute walk from the woods, I live near Albion Falls. Like, it was 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes away from Albion Falls.
Mm.
So it was, like, everything was available, right? Like, whatever you would want. And if you wanted to go to Toronto, it was, like, an hour. You could hop on a GO bus. So, I don't know. And now, as an adult, it's, you know, different because I can go anywhere I want and do anything I want, pretty much. not as limited as I was as a teenager.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's still, like, it has a good mix of things, right? Like, it's got culture, it's got, you know, art, you know, and it's got wilderness and
mm-hmm.
all that fun stuff, which I like, and yeah, it's still close to things. So yeah, Hamilton's a fun place.
Yeah. A little bit of everything here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's changed a lot, but everyone changes a lot. You can't sit there thinking, I don't want things to change.
Mm-hmm.
Things are going to change.
Yeah.
That's the nature of the business. So.
Yeah.
That's life.
What do you think is so special about the local music scene here?
I think people are actually really supportive, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I found anyway.
Yeah.
The people I've met and know are just like really nice about
everything. Mm-hmm.
Really great to know. Really helpful. Really friendly.
Yeah.
Like that to me, that's ideal. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like not every music scene is like that. In fact, a lot of scenes are not. A lot of scenes are much more cutthroat, much more full of drama. And I'm sure there's drama. I'm not part of it, but
mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's drama around. But for the most part, everyone's, like, super easy to get along with, really nice about things. You know, you talk to people, and they're like, yeah, you're cool. I can something to Longview, you know, it's nice, you know, so I like that. I think it's really eclectic too. Like there's a lot of different genres and styles floating around, but like people generally know each other and get along with each other, even though they're like in very different sort of circles.
Yeah.
You know, so you got your like, you know, people doing like folk and country and that kind of stuff. And you got people doing like, you know, like even up to like metal and like hard rock and then, you know, pop punk and whatever we're doing. And like, you know, it's all just kind of all over the place, but there's like a real kind of like, I guess it's a kind of kindness that I see anyway. I mean, maybe I'm just lucky, but it seems like there's a lot of kindness in the scene. And, it's also pretty progressive.
Yeah.
Like I know musicians generally tend to be progressive, but like the Hamilton scene's pretty progressive as far as, you know, social issues, which is obviously important to our band. So that's nice to see too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Who are some talented local artists that you think deserve more spotlight?
Good question. Well, my favorite local band is Basement Revolver.
Yep.
They're hands down my favorite local band. I love them. I own all their stuff. They're great. Who else can I call out? Another band, Sweet and Lowdown. I know them. I mean, I don't really know them, but I think they're good. I like their stuff. So they're cool. Another band, Concavity, who are like a two-piece, like, dark wave band. I love them. I love that kind of music, so I'm a huge fan of them. I think they just did a show with the Casbah, like, last week or the week before with Adonis, so that's cool. But them. Yeah, that's who comes to mind for, like, local people that I'm, like, super into.
Yeah.
But you really, I mean, you can't go wrong with, like, so much of the local scene. There's just so many talented people.
And a lot more variety than I think there's ever been.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Who is a dream collaborator of yours? And, like, you can go big on that one. Like, choose anyone.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about this in terms of, like, if I was going to do a solo record, because I had in my head to maybe do a solo record. And I was like, I'd either want to do something where I could, like, I'd have to do it myself, but if I could work with somebody, some totally out of left field, I'd love to work with, like, the B-52s, you know, that, like, Love Shack band. There's so much more than Love Shack. Their albums are, their early stuff. Oh man, I love the B-52s. But something like that, like, just work with, like, this kind of off the wall band who just, like, write these, like, really catchy pop songs that are also super weird. That would be really cool. I would love to do something like that. Alternatively, I would love to collaborate with, like, I mentioned Radiohead earlier, so, like, you know, Johnny Greenwood or Ed Robson or any of those guys. I'm sorry, Ed O'Byrne. Any of those guys would be cool to collab with because they're just amazing, and it would be so cool to watch. I just love to watch their process. Like, how do you make this stuff that's so amazing? Because it'd be a lot to learn there, right? You know, so I think that would be a big part of it. Like, learning how people create. It's so, I mean, I always think it's wonderful to watch how people create things. I could watch, like, music documentaries. Like, you remember, have you ever seen they used to do those, like, classic albums things where they would, like, break down how an album was recorded and, like, talk about all the tracks? Like, I used to love that because it's just, like, here's the creative process. Here's how it goes. I just want to soak it up and understand it. It's so cool.
It is. It's super interesting, yeah. Is there a local band or artist that you'd love to collab with on something?
Yeah. There's probably a lot. I'd love to work with them all.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to work with everybody. Who would be the person who I'd really want to work with the most, though? I'm going to try and give you the one I'd want to work with the absolute most. You know, someone who I've been, like, had been sort of pestering to, like, maybe do something with, but, like, we're in completely different genres, so I don't know that they're super interested in it, is Heather Valley, sort of country, I guess it's country.
Yeah, Americana
musician,
country. Yeah.
Who's currently on tour in Europe.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I've bugged her a few times to, like, at least do something, but, like, it's so different that I don't know. Probably isn't into it, but she'd be someone to be cool to work with just because it is so different. And I've always I've collaborated a lot with female vocalists over the years just because I like the dynamics of, like, when you get like my sort of baritone voice with like an alto or even a soprano voice and sort of like, you know, depending on their style of singing, it can make really, really interesting dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
So I always think that's cool. So I'm always into that. So yeah, that would probably be the person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that'd be fantastic. And, you know, I'm always up for like, you know, two completely different genres collaborating on something. I think it's super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. How did the band meet?
Yeah, so basically what happened was I was in the grand tradition of bands, I booked a show without
mm-hmm.
a band.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed a band.
Mm.
So I went perusing on the old internet and found Blake, the drummer of the band.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like a cool guy and we jammed a bit and it was like, you're perfect. And then for our first show, we hired a bass player who was like a freelance guy. But then he said, oh, my brother will come. So he brought his brother, Peter, who's our bass player, because he really liked the music and wanted to be part of it. So he joined up. And then so we did a few shows as the three of us, and we were like, we need to find another guitar player because our music is really guitar heavy and has lots of like, especially now, but even then, had lots of stuff going on, but like I can only play so much of it while I'm singing, and like it was just really complicated. So we needed a guitar player. So we auditioned a few people, and then we met Ty. That's how we met Ty. But we met Ty,
mm-hmm.
and he came to a show. Although he actually showed up after we were done playing, so he didn't actually get to see us. But we did get to hang out with him, which was good because we made sure that personality wise it was a good fit. And then. That was on February 29th, 2020. So then 2 weeks later, the entire world shut down.
yeah.
So we never actually got to play with Ty mm-hmm. until June, probably, when we could have an outdoor practice.
Yeah.
June or July. So we had another practice with him, and it was cool. And he was good, and he joined up. And, you know, he's part of the band. But, yeah, it was a bit of a process because he joined us right at the absolute worst possible time.
Yeah, good timing.
To do anything. So, anyway, he's with us now. And, he's cool. So,
yeah,
it's kind of how we did it. There were a lot of people that were almost in the band over, like, the period of time when it was forming. Because, like, we auditioned a bunch of people. We talked to a bunch of people about joining different kinds of things. But these are the four we settled on. So.
Sure. Yeah, no problem. We're going to hit pause in this conversation for a quick second and play everyone a single from the Soviet influence. Workers Unite is a song from earlier this year about the abuse of blue-collar workers and asking for a living wage.
To them and call them the man.
For anyone just joining us, this is Hot Shots on Air, and tonight I'm speaking with Peter Snow, the vocalist of the Soviet Influence, a socialist alt-rock band based in Hamilton. We just came back from playing Workers Unite, a single from earlier this year. How long did that song take to write?
I'm going to say about a week.
Yeah.
That's an interesting song. So that song actually has multiple key changes in it, but because every section is in a different key.
Yeah.
So for people, you know, musically, the key is sort of like the, I don't know how you describe it, but it's kind of like the scale that you're using, more or less, of notes. So each section was written sort of independently and then pushed, smooshed together to create a song. But the way that worked, so that was written, like, actually written in 2020 at the height of the first wave of the pandemic. So, like, yeah. April, May. So everything was closed. We couldn't go anywhere. And I wrote a lot of songs.
Yeah.
And that one, you know, I was fiddling around with it. And then what I would do at that point was, like, I would send it, I would write something, and then I would send it to Dave Partridge, who produced the album that we put out this year. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, like, here, Dave, like, what do you think of this song? And he's like, oh, this is cool. And then he would add some stuff. And then the other guys, if, you know, would have ideas, they'd put ideas in. And then it sort of would evolve in that way. And then all that would get put into, you know, into the pot, I guess. And then Dave would send back the song. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I basically, yeah, I think I wrote the three parts over the course of a week, and then the lyrics would have been written on the spot, which is generally how I write lyrics. I'll then tweak them after, but generally I'll write like the main thrust of it. And the two like kind of spoken parts in that song were done off the top of my head in one take. And there were other versions of that section with different things, but the version you hear is the one that, like, I would have just done that and been like, okay, there it is. Because that works a lot of times for me when it comes to, like, writing things like that. So, yeah, it was pretty quick. I mean, most of the time, like, I was churning out stuff at that point because the pandemic was going on, and I just had a lot of, apparently a lot of energy for writing, so.
How was your audience's reaction to the track?
I think people like it. It's, I'm trying to think of where it is in our, like, streaming numbers. Not our most popular song, but I think, like, message-wise, I really like it. Like, it has a really strong message. Like, it's very clear. It's, like, pretty blunt.
Yeah.
You know, most of our stuff is pretty blunt, but sometimes we're a little bit more opaque about what we're saying, but that song's not. It's, like, literally says what it says. But I think, you know, it's sort of a weird song in that, like, it has, like, those three distinct parts and they repeat, but they're not, like, it's not, I don't know, they're just very different and have different feels, so I think people haven't really known, I mean, I don't know, no one said this to me, but people probably don't know what to do with that song because it's a bit different.
Yeah.
And not quite the same as, like, some of the more straightforward stuff we wrote that's on that particular record and that we've been putting out over the last year and a half.
What do you hope your audience takes away from that song?
Well, I hope they get angry.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if they haven't already thought of this stuff, which I'm sure most of them have, I hope it just, like, fires up that anger in them. They're like, yeah, this is terrible. The system sucks. We need to change it. You know, hopefully that's the hope of that song, you know, that they see that. You know, and that, you know, that they need to direct their anger into the right place, too. Because that's the real trick of it, right? Like, tons of people are angry.
Yeah.
And want things to change. But where do they direct that anger, and where do they direct that change? It's actually really, really important. You know, that you get at the stuff that's actually going to materially change your circumstances versus, you know, attacking stuff that's not actually going to help you in any way. But there are people who are very invested in pushing you towards the things that are not going to help you because, you know, they want to protect their own skin in the game. So, yeah, I think that's kind of the point of that song. You know, like, really look around and see what's going on. And you probably know that, you know. In the first days of the pandemic, like, it wasn't as clear as it became later to the average person. Like, the pandemic, like, laid bare the inequalities of the system and, like, a lot of the major problems that people have been talking about forever, but a lot of people just ignored or didn't think were real or didn't care enough to know about.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, by the end of 2020, I think it was like, if you didn't know, it's because you didn't want to know.
Yeah.
You know, so that song's kind of like one of those things, like, look, here it is. It's going to lay it out for you. And now you know. So hopefully, yeah, people get angry and hopefully they decide they want to actually do something.
Mm-hmm.
Try and do something anyway.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Mm-hmm. So you guys released a full album this year titled Socialism and Introduction. When did the conversation around that project begin?
So that was definitely our like pandemic record. So
yeah,
we released the previous record in January 2020, and like without a thought that we were gonna do anything else for a while. We're just gonna like play with that, you know, probably write some stuff, but not really push too hard. But then when the shutdowns happened, it was like, well, you know, now I'm writing stuff. So mm-hmm. what are we gonna do with all the stuff we're writing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was sort of a question of, well, do we have enough material to make it into an album? And by, like, June of 2020 or July of 2020, there was enough. I knew there would be enough. So then, you know, then it was, like, a long, drawn-out process of, okay, like, when are we going to release this? And so originally it was, like, September 2020. Like, let's do it then. So we started putting all the, you know, all the pieces in place. We got the artwork done by Kaylin Kowalczyk, who's Lovesick Designs. He's a Hamilton artist, does some really cool stuff. And we had him do the artwork. He's done a lot of artwork. And so we had that done, kind of sitting on it, and like, what do we want to do? You know, are we going to put it out now, and then sort of September turned into October, then into November, and then suddenly it's Christmas, and we're like, okay, well, we'll just wait until the new year. And I think the thing we were waiting for was, like, stuff to open up.
Right.
Like, we were hopeful that things would open up, because, like, the thing about, you know, if you're going to release music, is it's really great to be able to go out and play
mm-hmm.
to promote it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, in our mind, it was like, okay, like, we'll put it out, and when we can play, play it. But that just didn't happen, you know, as everyone knows. And
mm-hmm.
it was getting less and less like, oh, this is going to happen anytime soon. So we thought, well, let's go for it. Let's do it. These are all, we want people to hear these songs. And we'd already released, three of them, I think, as like singles. So we're like, let's just put the whole thing out. And then we can work off of it and do some stuff with it. And we did. Yeah. And then it was out in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are some of the main themes on that album?
The big themes are things like, you know, income equality, class warfare, mental health, which is always a topic of my songs. Mm-hmm. So, like, Oh Not Tonight, which is our most streamed song ever, it's really about, like, suffering through a night and, like, needing support, needing help, and reaching out for it, and sort of that experience. So that song is definitely about mental health specifically. There's some stuff on there that's about like sort of like support and mutual aid. During the pandemic, mutual aid became this really big topic
mm-hmm.
that people hadn't really been talking much about before in any mm-hmm. like mainstream way, but it became pretty mainstream. And, like, we can support each other, we can help each other, and because people had to.
Mm-hmm.
People always have had to, but it definitely became clear then. So some of the songs touch on that idea of like, you know, we can't do things alone, we need each other, and that kind of idea. We need to work together. And then there's some songs that are more about like the impact of speaking out and what can happen if you do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the first song, or the second song in the album, Running Song, is basically about like being hunted down for having mm-hmm. a contrarian opinion, which thankfully has not been my experience, but
good.
There certainly are people that have had that experience
mm-hmm.
And continue to have that experience. So, you know, I was sort of channeling a bit of that idea. And then, like, even, like, the other theme I think that's on there a little bit is, like, frustration with older generations of people who have, like, you know, just not cared to do anything and still don't care to do anything.
Yeah.
And, like, a lot of frustration with, I mean, it's, again, it's not the whole group, but there's enough that it's, like, why, like, what? What are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you? Because I think for me, the thing that's been really frustrating, frustrating is the wrong word, but is irritating, I guess. But also a positive, I suppose, as well. I don't want to say it's like, so a lot of issues have like really come to light in the last year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Things like, you know, again, I mentioned income equality and class warfare, but also things like, you know, the treatment of indigenous peoples, you know, issues around the LGBTQ plus community. Like, there's things that like people had more or less just ignored, racism, obviously, that have sort of come to light. The frustrating thing is, because of my day job and my education, I was exposed to a lot of this stuff a long time ago and knew about it and had talked about it before with people, but like no one gave a crap. So the irritating thing is now suddenly, it's not that everyone suddenly cares. I think that's amazing and that's really important. The irritating thing is just remembering how long it's taken and that there were so many people who had the opportunity to do something and didn't bother or didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
That it just really, really, I mean, it makes me angry, I guess. So there's a line in The Riot, which is basically, it's actually very autobiographical. So I have an ancestor, a great, great grandmother, who was, even by the standards of her time, considered very racist.
Mm-hmm.
Her family had owned slaves. Prior to that, her family had, you know, taken lands from indigenous, like, a really, yeah, like, terrible segment of my family.
Mm-hmm.
Who I'm very unproud to be related to. Not proud at all. And, you know, there's a line in The Riot, which is basically like, our goal is for our ancestors to roll in their graves. And, you know, that's kind of like what I was feeling at the time. Like, there's all this disappointment in the way people have behaved and we need to act differently.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, there's still people alive who want us to act like, you know, our ancestors did.
Yeah.
And we have to coexist with these people and figure out how to deal with their existence and what to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how to cohabitate with them, in the universe. So that's a bit of that in there too, is that sort of frustration with older generations and their actions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. What was the goal behind creating that album?
I think, you know, for us, it's a bit of a statement, actually. Mm-hmm. And I know bands say that all the time, it's a statement. But literally for us, because of our philosophy, mm-hmm, as a group, so, you know, you mentioned that we're a socialist band, we are a very left-leaning political band. Like, yeah, that is our thing.
Yeah.
And it's not because we think it's something that's, like, cool or whatever. That's just the four of us. That is core to our personalities, to our beliefs. That's who we are as people. And so we want our music and our band to represent that and to reflect that, you know. You know, that's a very purposeful choice. We could choose to be a band that doesn't do any of that stuff. We could be a band that doesn't write political songs. We could easily write other kinds of songs. But we chose not to be that. So, you know, with Socialism and Introduction, the idea was to be, you know, here it is. This is it. This is the statement of, like, what we're about. In very clear ways. And like the last album before that, which was called The Price of Vigilance, you know, was in a similar vein and, you know, touched on a lot of this stuff too. Not as much though as Socialism Introduction did. And because of that, like it became that it has been, or it will be, our sort of like introduction to the world. Like, this is what we're about. This is who we are.
Mm-hmm.
Everything we do is going to be like this. This is going to be the sort of, like, you know, foundational piece of what we're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And subsequently, it has been. I mean, we've written enough stuff, and like, we're probably going to have another record come out next year, and it's going to be, you know, it's not going to be the same, but it's going to be thematically similar. If not even more literal and blatant, probably more literal and blatant, but it's definitely going to be another statement along the same lines, just to build on what we did with that album.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who did you work with to record and produce that album?
Yeah, so that was Dave Partridge, who's, mm-hmm, he works at his business is Helm Recording.
Yeah,
he used to work at a Milton. Now he's up north.
Mm.
But it was all, I mean, it's all done, it was all done remotely anyway, so it didn't really matter where he was. So we'd send him the stuff and he would work on it and he would tweak things and give us feedback and ask us to change stuff and, or give us suggestions on things we could change. And then we would send it back to him with the changes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we grow off of that and build off of that. And, I mean, Dave's great. He's a very talented musician. He's been around a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And produced a lot of albums. So we're really, really happy to be able to work with him. And it was just, it was good. Like, he was the kind of guy that you couldn't, like, you know, he booked 2 months in advance.
Yeah.
And we got really, I mean, for us, lucky with the pandemic, a lot of that work, obviously, he couldn't do because he had just closed the studio. So, he had time and we were able to float him work. So that was, you know, mutually beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to work with someone we wanted to work with who was really, really good. And he had some work so he could pay his bills, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have a personal favorite track?
Hmm. That's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I do love the one we just played, Workers United. I love that song.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's so good.
Yeah.
I like the writing I did on that song. I'm really happy with it. So that's probably like my secret favorite, I think. Oh, Not Tonight, which is like the one song people really like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I heard that song, I was like, holy, like, we did something really good, guys. Like, mm-hmm. we really did it with this one, guys.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Working Today, I think, is like my favorite of the tracks. It's probably the one I've listened to the most, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
When we were like, you know, doing all the work to kind of sequence the album and everything. I think that's the one I kept going back to, because I'm like, I just really like, that's like the way this is. I like that it's a bit weird and kind of, you know, different and has all the key changes and all the weird things going on.
Mm-hmm. What do you hope your audience takes away from Socialism and Introduction?
Well, I hope they understand us. I hope they mm-hmm. understand what we're about. Understand what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope they want to come along for the ride with us. That's what I really hope. They're like, yeah, this is like, this speaks for me. This speaks to me. This is something I want to join in, you know, and be part of.
Totally.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at with that.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel your songwriting has changed since you first started writing?
I think I've gotten smarter
mm-hmm.
with my songwriting. It makes sense because I have more practice at it, but
mm-hmm.
I'm making more intentional choices, I think is what that is. Like, when I used to write songs, it'd be like, oh, yeah, that sounds good. I'll just go with that. And now it's more like, okay, what would actually work here? Like, what would be a good idea to do here?
Mm-hmm.
And I can figure that out and do it. You know, I can sit down and be like, okay, I like this, but I want to change it and do something different. And I've actually gotten better at that, too. I used to hate to discard stuff. I'd be like, no, this was good. I like this. But now I'm totally willing to be like, you know what? That was good, but this is better. So let's do the better thing
mm-hmm.
and let the good thing go. And get on to, there's one, so funny enough, Oh Not Tonight, is when I first demoed it, was completely different, except mm-hmm. for the vocal line was the same,
mm-hmm.
but like the backing stuff was like 4 bass guitars all playing different things, like it was totally different. And when I sent it to Dave, he like was like, we gotta strip this down to its like elements, mm-hmm. and like you really like pulled it apart and made it into this like really what it is, which is great. So then I took that bass song and tried to write another song with it. And the same sort of thing happened. It was like, you know what, this isn't its best version. And we added some other stuff and we wrote this song called Put You Up, which was on our Toronto Prison Rights compilation that we did mm-hmm. in the summer. And, you know, same. It started out in the same place, but just, again, totally changed it and revamped it and made it different from that initial starting point. And, like, I feel like me even five years ago would have just like pushed through that original version and not gone that next step and reimagined it into what it became.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been a failure in some ways of songwriting because it wasn't giving the song the chance to be the best it could be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that's different now.
Yeah.
I will push things and I will try to make them better.
Beautiful. Perfect. What can we look forward to seeing from you and the band?
Yeah. So, we've got some shows, hopefully. One for sure, December 18th in beautiful Acton, Ontario. I don't actually know what time it's at yet, so I can't say, but...
No problem.
Keep an eye on our social media. We'll announce it when it's announced. Mm-hmm. We're planning a show in Hamilton for the fall, or for the, sort of the fall, it's fall now, winter. We're going to show in Hamilton. That detail is still being sorted out, but again, we'll announce all that when it comes out. We've got some more songs coming out in over the next few months. We've got a bunch of stuff we're just finishing up and we'll be releasing, so there'll be stuff for you to hear. We're working in the midst of finding more shows to do, so we'll definitely be playing in places. Yeah, and then who knows what else? Probably some other fun stuff. There always seems to be things happening. Mm-hmm. We always manage to find stuff to do.
Sweet, yeah. Well, thank you so much for talking with me. This was great.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It's nice to talk about the music.
Of course, anytime. So, everyone listening, you can find Peter and the Soviet Influence on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, and all streaming services as the Soviet Influence. And we're going to wrap up this episode with another single from the band. This Is the News is the first track off of the band's 2020 album about being bombarded with information and the inability to tell truth from fiction.
Hey everyone, this is Peter from the Soviet Influence, and you're listening to Hot Shots on Air on 101.5 The Hawk.
Gotta get on this ride.